Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome today. We are going to have a number of conversations this hour. Most of our conversations is going to be about the green economy. We're going to be talking with Van Jones, who was here at Morgan State University just a few months ago with Baltimore Green Week. He's one of the leading thinkers in our country and activist as well, not just thinker, but a doer. Founder of Green for All. We'll talk a bit about that. His new book is called The Green Collar Economy, How One Solution Can Fix Our Two Biggest Problems, which has to do with our economy and poverty and the issues of energy. It's a very important subject, especially what he's been doing with it. We'll get to that in a minute because he's been doing things other people have not, which is not just taking the whole realm of environmental arguments out of a predominantly white upper-class world and putting it into the streets and putting it into the working-class communities, into communities of color, where they belong, to take a movement from the bottom up to seize what needs to be seized in this country to change the direction of our country when it comes to the green economy. So we're going to talk about that because the next president, whoever that may be, will have to deal with that. One is talking about a great deal and one is not, but we'll get to that later as well. First, let me give you some of the news at the top of the hour today. There is a lot going on. I don't know if you heard what's going on between the Republicans and Democrats, but this week, Vice Presidential candidate Sarah Palin took aim at Senator Barack Obama. There was a New York Times article on Sunday that reexamined Barack Obama's connection to Bill Ayers, who in the 60s was a member of the Weather Underground, which is a radical group that launched a campaign of bombings, nonviolent bombings, and says nobody was ever killed. They bombed buildings, made sure they were empty, but blew them up as a symbolic campaign against the war. They blew up the men's bathroom in the U.S. Senate office building. I remember that. And they blew up a bathroom in the Pentagon. These are kind of symbolic things they did. They were underground. And the New York Times found, and I quote, that the two men do not appear to have been close, nor has Mr. Obama ever expressed sympathy for the radical views and actions of Mr. Ayers, end quote. Governor Sarah Palin used the article as a jumping off point for alleging that Obama and Ayers are too close for comfort.
Barack Obama says that Ayers was just someone in his neighborhood, but that's less than truthful. His own top advisor said that they were, quote, certainly friendly. In fact, Obama held one of his first meetings of his political career in Bill Ayers' home. And they've worked together on various projects in Chicago. And these are the same guys who think that patriotism is paying higher taxes. Remember, that's what Joe Biden said. This is not a man who sees America as you and I do. We see America as the greatest force for good in this world. I'm afraid this is someone who sees America as imperfect enough to work with a former domestic terrorist who targeted his own country.
And that was what Governor Palin had to say yesterday. But let's first make any comment here. Let's hear what Barack Obama said in response when he was speaking to a crowd, I believe, in Ohio today.
His campaign has announced that they plan to, and I quote, turn the page on the discussion about our economy and spend the final weeks of this campaign launching swift boat style attacks on me. They'd rather tear our campaign down than lift this country up. That's what you do when you're out of touch, out of ideas, and running out of time.
And that was Barack Obama responding. just in the fairness of truth and what goes on, it's one thing, I think, to debate issues, another thing is to kind of distort and lie about what reality is. And I think that the article, it was interesting on the New York Times, you all should read it to see what really happened there. It was in Saturday's New York Times, if I remember correctly. And they clearly pointed out that Barack Obama and Bill Ayers ran into each other occasionally in the neighborhood because they live three blocks away from one another. Bill Ayers threw one of the hundreds of fundraisers for Barack Obama when he ran for the state Senate before he became a U.S. senator. And they served on a board together. They gave out money to schools and educational groups. And there were people who were libertarians and leftists and everything in between sitting on that board. So that's where reality was. But this is going to get ugly the next few weeks. And we'll be talking about some of that ugliness as the weeks come on. And today, the Dow fell below 10,000 for the first time in 4 years. A growing economic crisis in Europe was the reason for the fall, some say. Before the U.S. stock market even opened, markets were down throughout Europe and Asia. In response to today's falling economy, President Bush had this to say.
It's going to take a while to restore confidence in the financial system. But one thing people can be certain of is that the bill I signed is a big step toward solving this problem.
And to comment on what was going on today in the markets and why they're going on and what can be expected in the near future is Dr. Anibhan Basu. Anibhan is chairman and CEO of the Sage Policy Group, an old friend and colleague who knows a great deal about the economy. And Anibhan, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Oh, anytime, Mark.
Pleasure to hear your voice.
Always a pleasure to hear yours.
So let's talk a bit about what this means today. I mean, from what I've read today, the stocks plunged on Dow Jones for as much as 800 points. The end of the day, I think, around 369 points below. Standard & Poor's was down, but not as much as it started, but it was down. And that across the globe, things were in a very bad shape. So talk about what all this kind of portends and means for us right now.
Well, what does it portend? It portends, I think, a very difficult time for the economy going forward. I mean, many people ask me today, well, I thought that they had bailed out the economy last week. So what was this about? And as many economists pointed out, you know, this package will take some time to implement. Banks are still hurting. They still don't have enough capital on their balance sheets, and they still have this bad debt on their balance sheets. And moreover, what's happened, Mark, is that this has taken on a global dimension. Banks in Europe are starting to show pain. Banks in Asia are starting to show pain. And banks in the rest of the world are starting to show pain because they bought into this toxicity, these toxic assets. Whether it was related to the American mortgage market or their own mortgage markets, that's what's taking place. And so the banking system globally is in bad shape. If the banking system globally is in bad shape, businesses can't access capital. If they can't access capital, they can't invest. They can't make payroll. That's bad for the broader economy, which is bad for corporate earnings. And, of course, at the end of the day, share prices are a reflection of many things, including corporate earnings. And it appears very clear now that globally, corporate earnings are about to slump in a severe fashion.
And we saw how significantly unemployment rate was risen, rose in the United States of America last month. So what does that mean? I mean, when people look at this and they think about the Great Depression and what happened in 1929 and the 1930s and where America was, we have very different periods in terms of technology and economy, but talk about the comparisons here.
There are some parallels. For instance, prior to 1929, Americans had spent a lot of money, ramped up their debt. You can remember the conspicuous consumption of the 1920s, the roaring 1920s. It was one big party. And then, of course, the banks failed because people could not pay back the obligations that they had incurred. There were runs on the banks, and many of the banks failed. And that's, by the way, the principal difference between this period and that period. The banks are still around, most of them. Yes, they're in bad shape. They're not making mortgages. They're not making loans generally the way that we would like or the way in which we're accustomed, but they still exist. Right now, the U.S. government in particular and our Federal Reserve are working very hard to recapitalize these banks so that the banks can return to business as usual. In 1929, there was almost no response. So that between 1929 and 1933, our unemployment rate in this country went from 4% to 25%. Today, the unemployment rate nationally is 6.1%. And so we're not yet to crisis levels. That said, I'm quite sure that over the next year, the U.S. unemployment rate will rise toward 7% and probably exceed it.
So, I mean, if you look at this in the context of the world right now, I mean, I was reading over the weekend about the arguments taking place in Europe. European countries are very angry at Ireland because Ireland decided to guarantee all the money in every bank in Ireland. So people were panicking things when people put all their money in Irish banks. I thought about it myself this morning. But I wonder what this kind of says about the arguments going on about the role of government. Many people are arguing that I've read recently that this infusion of capital, buying the bad debts, is not the way to resolve this crisis. Maybe a way to plug a hole for 10 seconds, but not a way to resolve the crisis.
Well, you know, one has to ask then, what are the other options? You know, I mean, one option is clearly do nothing, let the chips fall where they may, and let the banking system correct itself. And it probably would over time, but not before we had an extraordinarily deep recession in this country, with the unemployment rate rising well above 7%. And indeed, in some states of the country, Mark, already we're seeing, you know, really big unemployment numbers. Michigan is almost 9%. California is almost 8%. And the Californians can't even afford right now to make, you know, to afford their own government in the short term. They're asking the federal government for $7 billion. So, you know, things would proceed along that direction without some sort of aggressive response. And, you know, there are examples of countries that have basically done nothing in the face of these kinds of banking crises. Japan comes to mind. The Japanese, for year after year after year, did very little about their banking crises and the existence of this bad debt on bank balance sheets. And guess what? They lost 10 years of economic progress. The Americans are dealing with this more aggressively, and my hope is, my guess is, that in 2 to 3 years, we'll be better for it.
Well, one final thought on it, Bob, before we have to go to the next part of our program, is that there are, again, some arguments being made. We've heard on this show recently that two things have to happen besides what's going on, which is, A, that there has to be a real long-range plan developed to regulate an industry that's not regulated any longer, that it's out of control, that markets have to be on some levels controlled, the men who run them, and I mean men, most of them are men, mostly, and on the other hand, that you have to have a massive infusion into the economy of this nation for infrastructure. As we're going to talk about later in this program, the whole idea of green jobs being developed in America, a new technology to build a new industry that exports to the rest of the world. I mean, so what about those factors that nobody seems to be talking about what some people are arguing has to happen?
Oh, that's absolutely true. I mean, what we've seen is a nationalization of much of the nation's financial services sector. That gives the federal government really the power to re-regulate much of the financial services sector, and it's coming. It's coming. The second thing, your point about infrastructure, you're right. We have lost much of our global competitive advantage. Our share of global patents is dropping rapidly. Our students are not competitive in math by the 12th grade. And so our innovation capacity has been much diminished. We need to put money back into basic research. We need to put money back into infrastructure. The problem, Mark, is we've created such a massive federal budget deficit, it's not clear that we can afford to do those things or other things that we need to do. And so the next president is going to inherit this, and I'll tell you, the next president better be a great one.
I have one last question from a listener who wrote in, because where you left off is where we're going to pick up with Van Jones and our other guests in just a moment. But Sandra writes in, Jim Cramer of Mad Money TV on CNBC was on the Today Show this morning, emphatically advising all Americans to pull all the money they might need in the next 5 years out of the stock market, no matter what the losses they may suffer as a result. This is scary coming from a famously bullish guy. What does your guest think of this advice? It sure scared the crap out of me. I want to buy a home in the next 5 years, and my down payment is currently tied up in the stock market. Should I sell?
Look, I mean, that's dangerous territory to ask for that kind of financial advice. But let me be clear right now that cash is king. And to the extent that people can raise cash by, for instance, selling some, you know, company shares that they know, or, you know, the management is not one in which they have confidence, so on and so forth, I think it makes sense to raise some cash. And look to deploy that cash strategically in 3 months, 6 months, whenever the market appears to have stabilized, and cash is king. And it does make sense. Cramer is right to a certain extent, I think, as he almost always is, to a certain extent, but not completely, to raise some cash so that, you know, when the opportunities present themselves, you can jump in. By the way, look at Warren Buffett. That's exactly what he's doing. $4.7 billion 1 week into Constellation. Next week, $5 billion into Goldman Sachs. Next week, $3 billion into GE. So the smartest money is already back in a little bit. But again, what's allowing that is that he had cash to begin with.
Ani Bambasu, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to have you with us and help us figure out what's going on in this economy of ours.
Anytime,
thank you so much.
All right, thanks.
Ani Bambasu, Chairman and CEO of the Sage Policy Group. We're going to take a very, very brief break and introduce you to Van Jones when we return. Let me announce this as we go to break. WEA is in need of volunteers for our upcoming fall membership drive beginning October 18th through October 26th. If you have an hour or two to volunteer for this show and any other WEA program, call Norvell Jackson. Norvell Jackson in our membership department at 443-885-2075. That's 443-885-2075. We'll be back in just a minute with Van Jones and the green economy and the future of America. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. And now we're going to talk about something very practical that we can do about this nation and the conditions we find ourselves in. As we look at the crumbling economy, the energy crisis we're in, the rising poverty in America, the desolation of our inner cities. There was a man who spoke here at Morgan State University during Green Week a few months back, Van Jones. Van Jones is the founder and president of Green for All, a national advocacy group based in Oakland, California. committed to building an inclusive green community beyond the what you think of as a white environmental movement. He is bringing this struggle into the toughest urban constituencies. He's earned him many awards and accolades for his work. They're creating the idea of green pathways out of poverty. He also co-founded the Ella Baker Center for Human Rights Color of Change. Both organizations are deeply committed to equal justice and for low-income people. And he's written a new book that comes out on September 7th in the bookstores. And I was reading it online. They sent it to me so we could get ready for the show. It's called The Green Collar Economy. And it's a pleasure to have you with us, Van. Welcome.
Well, first of all, I'm just honored to be on the show. The Green Collar Economy comes out actually tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
The other way to say the 7th is tomorrow.
You know, I forgot tomorrow. So tomorrow is September the 7th.
October the 7th.
I mean October the 7th. Yeah, I was in the bookstore yesterday trying to buy it, and they said it was out on October 7th. So that'll be coming out, and we encourage. So and
we're encouraging everybody to go get it online. Some people don't like Amazon.com, but if you do get it there, maybe tomorrow we're number one on Amazon. We think that the crises that we've been talking about, that we've been predicting, in terms of the complete unsustainability of having this George Bush economy propped up on credit cards, the U.S. economy being based on consumption, debt, and environmental destruction, that those days are over. That whole strategy, that whole philosophy has now been completely discredited, and we're going to have to now. It would have been great if we could do it by choice. Now we're being forced to move back in a direction where our economy is built not on consumption but on production, building things again here, not on credit but on creativity, not on environmental destruction but on environmental restoration. That is the jobs agenda. That is how we jumpstart and restart this economy. That is how we get our energy prices down. That's how we get out of these oil wars. That's how we bring carbon down. That's how we avoid more Katrinas and super hurricanes. A green recovery program to put this country back to work, retrofitting America, repowering America, rebooting America, doing it clean and green based on American jobs, based on American resources. That is the only way forward.
Van Jones is our guest. We're also joined in the studio, let me say, by John Campagna, who brought Van Jones here a few months back as volunteer president of Baltimore Green Week. He's principal with Benchmark Asset Managers, an organization that helps investors make socially conscious decisions about where to invest their money. And Kevin Zeese is with us, director of the Campaign for Fresh Air and Clean Politics from Baltimore. He's written a great deal about how we can turn the Baltimore economy around with green jobs. And, well, gentlemen, good to have you in the studio with us as well.
Thank you.
Ben, let's talk about the thesis here. This is really important, and I encourage our listeners, by the way, to join us at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. There have been discussions I've been part of, and I wanted to start here with you, that with activists in the inner city of Baltimore and communities of color, especially communities of color in poverty in Baltimore, who have been trying to come up with ideas about how to seize control of their neighborhoods and turn them around, vacant homes, how that can lead into jobs, how you create urban agriculture, how you change the nature of inner cities themselves with this green economy. And that's a piece that's always left out. We always kind of separate the two. The notion of poverty and the economy and the environment are never really brought together.
Well, I can only say that they are separated in the minds of, you know, Western, philosophy and that kind of thing. But in reality, they couldn't be more integrated. As we're beginning to see, our energy crisis, our environmental climate crisis, and our economic crisis essentially is one crisis. It is a crisis of an over-reliance on polluting, dirty, dangerous energy technologies from the last century. Basically, we were using whale oil 150 years ago, and then somebody said, hey, let's stop doing that. Let's use this black goo in the ground. And we've been relying on an outdated, dangerous, dirty energy technology for the past 100 years. And as a result, we find ourselves spending multiple billions of dollars being the world's policemen of oil supply lines, spending billions of dollars of military on the military side so that we can then spend billions of dollars buying this stuff from all around the world, when we know and have known that there is a Saudi Arabia of wind in our Midwestern plain states. There is another Saudi Arabia of solar in the Sun Belt, and that if we had a clean energy grid that could get those clean electrons from our power centers to our population centers on the coast, we could be completely independent of this dirty, dangerous energy technology. Well, that is the key breakthrough here, is to take the climate crisis and the energy crisis and the economic crisis seriously, and to say just because we spent $700 billion bailing out the bankers doesn't mean we actually bailed out the economy, doesn't mean we bailed out the people, certainly doesn't mean we bailed out the planet. I believe, if you look at the numbers, we could have twice the positive impact for half the cost. In other words, $350 billion put into a massive retrofit of the country to, you know, weatherize millions of buildings. That's thousands of contracts, millions of jobs. We know we have a tough winter coming. Why not have a winter jobs program to begin to put people to work, weatherizing buildings, saving on energy? The money spent will be repay itself within 2 years. Why not, again, put up solar panels and wind turbines all across the country? Put people to work. Let the federal government have a revolving loan fund or do federal loan guarantees to get private capital flowing toward the only part of the economy that is going to grow over the next 5 years, and that is the green part.
We're also joined, as I said, by John Campagna and Kevin Zeaton. I'd like them to join in on this conversation also with their own questions for Van Jones to kind of get this dialogue going between us and have you join us here at 410-319-8888. There are many people listening to this program who are community activists who work hard to change the social nature of our community here, to move things ahead. It's your time to join this conversation at 410-319-8888 with Van Jones, who is one of the great national leaders we have fueling this movement across the country. So join us here. And you were going to say something, John Campagna.
Yeah, I was going to mention that all great job generations and income generations countries always come from an opportunity. Many times the government has stimulated opportunity. I mean, one of the biggest job stimulant programs we had in mid-century was the Interstate Highway program that Eisenhower put in place. It was a military purpose to connect the country, but it also generated a huge amount of economic benefit, both in transportation but jobs. You know, there's so many people I know personally who worked in the highway department. My good friend next door, neighbor, he's been in the highway department now for 40 years. It was a huge generation of benefits, and it benefited the structure that we wanted to live as back then, oil-based car suburban economy. And it just was a boom. So why aren't we looking at that same solutions, same way of driving solutions by putting the government behind these green initiatives to bring jobs, incomes, not just to the lower class, not just to the poor folks, but also up to the middle class. Now, I hate to say it, there's people in the middle class who are going to be soon sliding down to working class level income because of what's going on in the economy. So,
well, Van, before we turn to Kevin Zeitz, I wonder then how you begin to shift the consciousness, though. I mean, America in the last 40 years has moved away as much as it can, at least in the consciousness, in a public debate about government, some would call interference, but infusion of government capital and government agencies and efforts into the economy itself.
Well, I mean, yeah, that was true until 2 weeks ago. Surprise, surprise. You know, when poor people are suffering, And working class people are suffering, and people of color are suffering, and vulnerable people are suffering, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It's good for you. We'll let you sink or swim. It'd be terrible. It would be a moral hazard for us to get involved. You made dumb decisions on your personal credit card. You should go down in flames. Be homeless. It's good for you. But the minute that rich people, wealthy people, run into trouble, suddenly we need a $700 billion bailout. So we are now finished with that discussion. We should be done with that discussion for the next 20 years. At no point should we hang our heads and say, when we say we want government involved to fix the problem, if the richest people in the world and the richest people in the United States can't get along without government support in tough times, we should not either. Now, the question is, what are we going to do? How much will it cost, and who will pay for it? Who will benefit, and who will bear the burden? The only intelligent way forward is a green stimulus package. That's the only, if you look at the options, a green stimulus package, the brother was just saying it. He nailed it. He said, in the last century, We had a national highway program to move bodies around, mm-hmm. and it created incredible wealth. Then, just a few decades later, we had a national program to move data around. It was called the what? Information Superhighway. And look at the billions of dollars that have been created from that. Now we need a national program to move energy around, clean energy electrons around. It will be called a clean energy grid. It could be called the energy, I guess Tom Friedman calls it, you know, ET, energy technology, a clean energy grid. Why do we want that? Because it will create jobs, jobs, jobs. You can put Detroit back to work, not making SUVs to destroy the world, but making wind turbines to help save the world, because each wind turbine needs 8,000 finely machined parts. Each wind tower requires 20 tons of steel. You put the steel workers back to work. We want to weatherize millions of buildings so they leak and use less energy, because you put your construction sector back to work. You're not building, but you're rebuilding and retrofitting, so that we are more efficient with our resources. These are real jobs that can be paid for with real savings. I'll tell you the other way you pay for it, and I'll be quiet.
That's all right. I'm going to open the phone.
You're here to talk, man. You're here to talk.
Take 10% of the Pentagon's budget.
Yeah.
Allegedly, the Pentagon is supposed to be for our national defense. Well, the number one source of national insecurity is this overdependence on this dirty, dangerous energy technology called oil. We have to fight wars to keep bringing over here. Why not take 10% of the Pentagon's budget and use that to do a clean energy grid here in the United States that will make us energy secure, energy independent? The highway project was considered a part of the military strategy of the United States to be able to move personnel, military personnel, around in the case of an invasion. That was how it was sold to the American people. Well, I think we should sell a similar, robust program to the American people, and you can pay for it by taking the money from Halliburton.
Van Jones' ideas are on the table. Join us here at 410-319-8888 as we explore how to turn America around with a green economy. It's been part of this presidential debate. How does it work? How are we going to do it? Van Jones, founder of Green for All, has written a new book, Green Collar Economy, How One Solution Can Fix Our Two Biggest Problems. It's out in the bookshelves tomorrow in your bookstores, or you can order it any way you like. John Campagna, who is principal with Benchmark Asset Managers and volunteer president for Baltimore Green Week for many years, is with us. Kevin Zeese, director of Campaign for Fresh Air and Clean Politics Baltimore, just in a very strange case here, quiet, which is very strange for Kevin Zeese. Let's open the phones and let him say something in a minute.
410-319. You're keeping me quiet, Mark.
410-319-8888. Mike in Washington, D.C., you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Mike.
How you doing? I have two questions for Mr. Jones. Let me make a statement. One, I'm going to get the book because I believe what he's doing is very important. But my questions are, one, does he in fact believe the existing climate that we live in, that the powers that be, principally the government and private capital, will even entertain these ideas without direct civil disobedience? My second question being, does he believe that there is enough private capital out there to start implementing some of these ideas instead of waiting on the government to do some of this stuff? And I'll just hang up and listen.
Well, first of all, thank you for agreeing to get the book. That's going to help my children to go to college, so I appreciate that, first thing first. But I appreciate that. But on the more serious side, I do think that we are at a crossroads in the country. And so I think we should be willing to do civil disobedience and whatever else it takes, because now we're talking about saving our children, saving the economy, saving the earth, serious times. But do not underestimate at this stage the fact that the sort of military petroleum complex that has driven the country into a ditch, the kind of Texas to Pentagon axis that has driven the country into a ditch, do not underestimate the extent to which they've been discredited and are themselves disoriented. And also do not underestimate the other countervailing forces in society. Silicon Valley now wants to make its next, you know, billions and trillions on clean tech, but they don't have the government on their side. They're going to need people in Baltimore and Watts and other places to be voting for and supporting political moves that let this clean energy technology take off. In other words, potentially we have allies that we have not had in the past.
You mean like T. Boone Pickens?
For instance, you know, there's T. Boone Pickens. There's strange things happening even in the Republican Party. A time of flux and crisis is a time that the people can begin to move.
That's right.
And set and reset and reframe the agenda. The book, Green Collar Economy, is an attempt to reset and reframe the agenda around environment and energy to include the oppressed and the vulnerable. There is enough private capital to begin to move, to answer your second question. But here's the problem.
Van, we have to take a short break. We'll come back and let you finish that thought. Gary in Baltimore and Bevin Fells Point, the next two callers up. And we'll come right back with Van Jones, John Campagna, Kevin Zeese, and let Kevin Zeese speak as well. Right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Stein, and we're talking with Van Jones, founder of Green for All, author of the book Green Collar Economy, How One Solution Can Fix Our Two Biggest Problems, out tomorrow in the bookstores. John Campagna is with us, principal of Benchmark Asset Associates, volunteer president for Baltimore Green Week. Kevin Zeese, director of Campaign for Fresh Air and Clean Politics in Baltimore, who's written extensively about how we can turn Maryland's economy around with a green economy. And you were finishing a thought, Van, then we'll go to the phones at 410-319-8888.
I was just trying to point out that there is private capital out there. In fact, there's a lot of private capital that's chasing green projects. The problem is that the government is still on the side of the problem makers in the U.S. economy. The polluters, the prisons, the Pentagon, they get the lion's share of all the money and all the love from the government. The problem solvers, the solar industry, the wind industry, organic food, our community-based programs, you know, the problem solvers get very little support. So what we have to begin to do is change not just light bulbs, but begin to change the laws so that the problem solvers can get a little bit more support. And then you're going to see private capital flow like you haven't believed. We can fix this. We can use this moment to create the economy we've always wanted that respects the earth and has more opportunity for people because we're producing things again. But we've got to get the laws right.
You know, this is John, just real quick, man. We see it every day in my business. I have all my clients trying to figure out how to invest more directly into things that are going to make an impact, be it community development, be it green technology, be it bay cleanup. And we still are wrestling with trying to find ways, and that's the programs we have to set in place.
Before we go to Gary and Bev, a thought from you, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was very good in this last bailout. The one good thing I really appreciated in the Senate was the 8-year extension of the tax credit on solar and wind. That was a really good step because I think that will help stabilize the investment. The investment already is projected, you know, to go into the almost $200 billion by 2020 from private capital. So it's moving very quickly. One thing I'm disappointed about the presidential election is the way this debate's framed as independence from foreign oil, because then the solution they put forward is the all of the above, the phony clean coal, the massive investment in nuclear, more oil drilling, oil shale, oil tar. That is all a waste of money and a look toward the past. We need to be looking toward the future, which is going to be a clean energy economy, and that is what's going to solve not only our economic problems, but a lot of our national security problems. We're starting a project, my group, Voters for Peace, is starting a project with Friends of the Earth that's bringing the peace movement and the climate change movement together called Climate Security. We're going to announce it next week, but you can see the website at globalclimatesecurity.org, globalclimatesecurity.org, to get an idea of what we're talking about. This is the future cause of future wars in the future, mass movement of people, drought, famine, poverty, flooding. It's going to cause the conflicts. We got to deal with it now for our national security, economic, and environmental security.
I want to pick up on what all of you just said and bring it back to Van Jones. Let me go to the phones here first at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on the green economy and our future. Gary in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Gary.
No, it's Jerry.
I'm sorry, Jerry.
Listen, back on 927, and Van knows all about this, we participated here in Baltimore in a nationwide one-day rally, and we held it down in Clifton Park. And I don't think anybody ever held a rally down in Clifton Park about the environment. For Van's information, Clifton Park is in the heart of one of the poorest areas in Baltimore City. And at that rally was a great combination of different groups, one of them being organized labor And it seems to many of us that we need to bring organized labor into this. They have the facility to train thousands of people, and it's to their advantage to do that. So it's one of the things that we talked about on 927. And we also had representatives of Baltimore City government there. We had a woman from Office of Job Development. So the city of Baltimore is maybe not totally behind us, but they're leaning towards it. And we also had wonderful community groups there. ACORN was involved in it. United Workers was involved in it. And a group called Peer to Peer, which is an organization of 20 different youth groups across the city. And so, you know, there are things happening here in Baltimore. We need to get the word out there a little bit better than we do. And, you know, Mark, a little bit of that getting it out is on you. As somebody who has access to the airwaves.
Well, you know, we will. I mean,
so we will support everything. And one other thing, Dan, what about the $125 million from the Green Jobs Act and the $2 billion from the block grant that never got any funding? Can you speak about that?
Sure. Thanks, well, Van?
Sure. First of all, I'm so happy and excited to know and to mention this whole question of what happened on September 27th. We decided, you know, with some allies here at Green for All, we said, what if we had, you know, some rallies, you know, just people saying we want green jobs. You know, could we get Black and Latino and Native American and Appalachian folks? Could we get 50 rallies representing, you know, 50 states? Well, we wound up not with 50 rallies, not with 150, but with almost 700 rallies in all 50 states across the country. And if you don't believe it, because it sounds unbelievable, go to greenjobsnow.com and look at the most beautiful pictures from all over the country, hundreds of them, of people of color mostly, saying we want a green economy. Don't tell us it's just for white people or whatever, it's just some corny stuff. We see a green economy as a place to, not just for rich people to spend money, but for ordinary people to earn money and poor people to save money, greenjobsnow.com. I also want to point out that we did get you know, some very important legislation done in Congress at the end of last year, getting the Green Jobs Act and the Green Block Grant into the energy bill, which would have created a lot of money to weatherize, solarize buildings, put people to work, train them. And this year, logjam, roadblock, very little of that money got appropriated. None for the job training and even very little for the weatherization. We have to make this priority number one for the new administration, because we need to retrofit America. We need to have a massive campaign, winter jobs, summer jobs, weatherizing, rebuilding, retrofitting our building stock. Why? Because that is how we're going to cut carbon most dramatically and create the most jobs and save the most money on energy.
The question
I want to say, go ahead,
Ben, finish up.
Well, the last thing I want to say about that is, we say, you know, we can't find jobs, you know, our young men, their prison records, et cetera, they're locked out. Essentially, that's the new Jim Crow. You don't have to call somebody the N-word or an ethnic slur. You just call them a felon, and they're locked out of the economy. We need to create a massive demand for labor that is so big that it will force the labor movement and business and government to reintegrate our young men and women who've been thrown out. We don't have a green economy. We can't just have it be based on reclaiming thrown away stuff. It's got to be based on reclaiming thrown away lives. And the way you do that, massive retrofit campaign, if we double the rate of building retrofits from our present 6% to 7% nationally, you will then double the labor movement in that sector, double the demand for labor, and they'll have to go get our brothers and sisters out of prison to give them the tools, the training, and the technology to retrofit America.
Van Jones and John Campagna, Kevin Zietz, 410-319-8888. A green economy, how real is it for our future in America? How do we get there? Bev and Fells Point, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Bev.
I want to say first that I appreciate finally hearing an intelligent and positive conversation about the crisis in our economy. It brings to mind, there's a Chinese proverb that says crisis is a catalyst for change, and that's what I'm hoping this will bring about. But my question is, are the principles and ideas of a green economy being taught in the colleges and universities? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Hey, what about our business schools? Are we tackling those issues in our business schools, John?
There's some that are starting to appear. You hear a lot on the West Coast or some schools in Presidio, San Francisco, and so forth. But I must admit, and I don't know how much of this is greenwashing to start with, but like NYU is having some programs about sustainable real estate. And that's a big thing in New York because, you know, in New York, when you build now, you got to build by LEED standards, which is one of the few green standards. There's no way you can't. So now there's a huge boom in green building in New York.
Johns Hopkins in Baltimore has put forward a pretty strong
greening
effort. I think it's much more than greenwashing. They're pretty serious about it. So that's a good sign for Baltimore.
I think the kids are driving it more than the professors.
Yeah.
I think there's a real upswing in activism within the students, and they recognize that this is their next opportunity because this is the next opportunity for us.
I'm going to say I've just gone to greenjobsnow.com to take a look after Van said it, and I didn't know about the rally. We would have covered it. We'll have to be.
We had 100 people there, and it was a rainy day, and it was a great mix of people, as Jerry described. I'm particularly glad to see the youth groups, the peer-to-peer project. It's really great to see young African-American youth taking this issue on. They're kind of young Van Joneses out there who are going to be very impressive leaders in the future.
There are hundreds of them in the city.
They really are.
Which is really amazing.
And, you know, one thing, this is John real quick, about the private capital and government. Government funding is important, but one other thing we got to remember is government regulations is just as important. You know, New Jersey has a very good law of tax credits and rebates on solar installation so that the solar industry can install solar on people's houses without charging them and then treat it like a utility. We don't have that in Maryland.
Massachusetts just passed law requiring that of their utilities offer that as an option.
But the question, I'm going to throw this question out there. I'm going to go to John and Randallstown and Wendy in Baltimore. Our next caller's up. There's another Gary who's calling as well. Let's try to get some of these people who have called in to join this conversation. But the question is the will in this country to make this happen. You saw the battle over Van Jones. We saw the battle over
the bailout
in Congress that we covered extensively. And then you saw many members of the Progressive Caucus in Congress, the largest single caucus in the United States Congress, back away from it and say, okay, we have to support this, the bailout as it's done now because, I mean, it was really pushed very hard by the Democratic Party leaders. And the will to debate this and make it happen in Congress, the will to say that we're going to spend, I think you said earlier, $350 billion to retrofit this country and change the nature of the economy of this country. That's a big number for people to swallow, even though they're having a hard time figuring out how to swallow $700 billion. So how does that happen in reality, and where does that money come from?
Well, you know, a couple things I want to say. First of all, the $700 billion is not a check. I mean, it's essentially a line of credit. It gives the government the opportunity to step in, probably too much power to step in with too little oversight. And we should have gotten more for our money than that. We should have gotten a piece of those banks as opposed to a bunch of bad debt.
Amen to that.
We do have resources in this country. Like I said, with $1 trillion or whatever for the Pentagon and all these misbegotten wars, we can put together revolving loan funds, federal loan guarantees, things that that can be revenue neutral, for instance.
And can incorporate private capital.
It can incorporate private capital. And so it's a question of using creative financing to actually help the country as opposed to using creative finances to bankrupt the country, which is what the wealthy just did. There's nothing wrong with creative financing, but do it above board and do it in the public interest.
Obama's calling for $150 billion a year for, I think, 10 years, is it? And that would be a step. I mean, I think it's got to be probably doubled in size, but at least he's talking about in the campaign.
Yes. You put your finger on the most important issue. And the most important issue isn't the question of policies. It's not the question, because we've got good policies. We know, the brother was just talking about, great policies, even at the local level, that can make a difference in terms of creating jobs. It's not just about the technology. We know about the technology. It's about the politics.
That's right.
The reason we got rolled, and we got royally rolled the last 2 weeks to take on all the bad debt and leave those banks in the hands of private people. We didn't nationalize anything. We nationalized the pain and we privatized the gain. That's what we did. And the reason that we got rolled so badly was because we do not have a standing capacity in our African-American, Latino, working class, white, Asian, Native American communities to have this conversation and to be very clear about what our interests are. Here is where it all changes. Hope and change are coming in November, and in a very few months, there will be a very different a White House, I believe. And in that situation, we have to not expect one person to fix everything. Frankly, I don't want the president to fix everything. I just want the president to stop breaking everything. That's my main prayer. If the president stops breaking everything.
And that'd be a change.
That would be a change. And then we have to be able to put forward a clear and compelling vision about how we want to fix it. This book, The Green Collar Economy, which comes out tomorrow, you can order it today, is my attempt and my organization's attempt to put forward a bold vision. If we don't put forward a bold vision, then when people come with these panic attacks and stupid ideas, people will fall for them. Even our black congressional congressmen will crumble. But if we can rally around bold thinking, clear thinking that says, no, we want an economy that lifts people up and respects the earth, there's a smart way to do it, and we stay firm, we can bring the country with us.
I think, Van, two things. Oh, go ahead.
I just callers. Want to get another caller in here, yeah, and let you jump right back in, Kevin. 410-319-8888. Gary, you're on the air from Baltimore. Hi, Gary, you there? We lost Gary?
Let's go next, Gary.
Oh, dear, we had to say it was that my note here, he has a son in prison and has something to say that loves Van's idea. But let's go to our next caller who's been waiting for a while. John in Randallstown, you're on the air.
Yes, how you doing?
Well, John.
I have a comment or a question. How do you think it would go, or do you think it's a good idea for us to move a portion of our budget for alternative energy into the defense budget? Because I feel that if something was to happen to the oil that we import and we would run out of reserves, that would affect, you know, that would affect our country. And I just wanted to know how you think that would go, if how well you think that idea would go over if one of the candidates would say, let's move a portion of our budget for that into the defense budget.
I think you're halfway right. I would say let's move a portion of the defense budget out into clean energy. I think that would be the smartest, because otherwise you're going to have Halliburton eating up the money, and we'll have very, very rich people from Halliburton and probably seven solar panels. If you look at how they'd run this war.
There's actually talk of turning the Pentagon parking lot into a covered solar panel array that would actually produce a lot of energy. So there's talk of that. And there's no question that the military wastes more oil than almost any other sector.
And there are parts of the economy that we've been talking about in terms of, let's say, space technology. I mean, there have been all these articles that I've been reading about. Over the next 10 years, we could develop solar panels orbiting the Earth to take care of the energy needs of the United States of America. It would be a huge project, would cost billions of dollars to make, but it would re-energize the space.
That's being talked about, but you know the real solutions are much simpler. It's a democratized economy where every house becomes efficient and energy producing. Every car becomes efficient energy producing while it's parked outside during the day. Same with businesses. So it becomes much more the kind of thing you're talking about there is very exciting, but it's very expensive, and I would not put that near the top of my list at all.
Fine.
But sorry, Mark. I hate to disagree with you. I know, because we agree so much.
That's fine. But, I mean, and battery technology is another place that.
Oh yeah, sure.
America has to invest in to even begin to think
and
about.
And Buffett invested today in a Chinese battery maker rather than into the United States, which disappointed me a great deal.
And we are speaking a lot of technology now, but there's a whole bunch of investments that can be done even in our rural communities.
That's right.
To help with the carbon sequestration. Did I say that right? And other issues that will preserve the environment in a better manner than we do now with our technology. So there's this all becomes a big snowballing positive green monster.
410-319-8888. Gary, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Gary, you're on the air.
Hi. First of all, Mark, I got some pictures of you from when Amy Goodwin was here Friday. And to join in on this subject, first of all, Van Jones, you're doing a super, super, super job. And I already called my daughter.
Gary, could you pick up your phone, because it's really hard to hear you when you're talking through the speaker.
Okay, let me take that off. Hold on, I'm right here.
All right.
Especially when you're bragging on me and saying nice things about me, make sure it gets
yeah,
that's
here.
Right.
Okay, now how's that?
That's better.
That's beautiful.
Okay. Now, my daughter graduated from Cornell with a degree in natural resources. She got her master's in entomology from University of Georgia. So when she was a little girl, I was telling her, look, I want you to go out there and save the world. She took it seriously. But conversely, I have a son also in prison, And when I heard somebody say, we can,
you know, help get these people out of prison and put them to work, you know, that really struck a chord with me. And, you know, that being said, I also wanted to throw into the mix the fact that, you know, half the world's population lives on $2.50 a day or less. How are we going to incorporate the other folks into this mix? And I'll hang up and listen to what you guys have to say.
Thank you so much, Gary.
My brother. Well, you know, well, there are two parts of it. First of all the best to your son and your daughter. You know, that's a painful situation. But I also know that, you know, I went to Yale for law school, and there wasn't anything that folks were doing in our community that wealthy kids were not doing on that campus, and worse, every drug, everything you can imagine. And we found ways to get those young people turned around, healed up, and back out into society. Those, you know, those kids are now doctors, lawyers, the president of the United States, you know, cut up kids from Yale who got healed up and had a second chance. So I think our young people deserve that same chance. We know what to do with kids when they get in trouble. We just don't do it for everybody's child. So no, that's number one. But number two, you know, to your point, this is a global problem, and there will have to be a global solution. I focus on American jobs, American technology, because I'm trying to get people in America to vote right and act right. But that doesn't, that's not a, there's no circle around my moral concern. I just know that the people around the world need us to fix the American system. And in order to do that, you have to put forward some ideas that Americans, most of whom don't necessarily listen to shows like this, though they should, can rally behind. That said, we can and should seek to share with the world these solutions. America can lead the world, but just we shouldn't do it in war, pollution, and incarceration rates. We should lead the world in clean and green technologies, sharing them so India, China, Africa, Latin America can boot up clean and green, not make our mistakes. Don't follow us down into this ditch where we are. You know, go to a better, higher place. That's possible. There are some trademark, copyright, technology sharing issues. They should not be allowed to stand in the way. Private property rights and intellectual property rights should not be allowed to stand in the way. This is a global emergency. We should be doing all we can to both solve the problems of batteries, solve the problems of next generation of solar, solve the problems of our what we call the hyperconductive power lines, so we don't lose so much energy on the power lines. All those breakthroughs should then be shared with the world.
2008 is a very important election year. 410-319-8888. Wendy, a quick thought from you. You're on the air.
Yes, I just want to call and Mark, thank you for putting Van Jones on. I looked him up because I couldn't believe there weren't two Van Joneses, and he is in charge of Color for Change. I've been signing your petitions for years. I went to your reception in Washington the other day. I made the 10 calls to Louisiana for the Gen of Six, and I just want to thank you so much for bringing me that awareness, and now for all that you're doing for the green situation, and also now I learned that you've done a lot with addiction, and I was a nurse for addicts for a long time. So thank you for all that you're doing. And Kevin, a thank you to you too.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Wendy, for your call. So gentlemen, we only have a couple of minutes left here. So let's talk about what has to happen now and the most important things you think people have to keep in their minds. Literally, we have a minute and a half or so left.
If Baltimore, real quick, we got to look at how to team up with these great foundations we have in this town to start some things and speak with the government about how they can change some regulations that allow more private enterprise, especially in the lower income communities that need these type of jobs and so forth.
People got to get involved. We need this is going to be a grassroots movement. We need people to get involved in the Sustainability Commission in Baltimore, get them active in that, get involved in the Chesapeake Sustainable Business Alliance, get involved in CCAN to work for better laws. There's a lot of opportunity here. We can solve a lot of problems at once if we do this right.
Van, I think
said what we need to do. Buy my book. The Green Collar Economy. That's what we need to do.
But we're out of time, and that's the way to end it. Van Jones' book, Green Collar Economy, How One Solution Can Fix Our Two Biggest Problems, is out in the bookshelves tomorrow, and it's a book to cause discussions among your family, friends, and your groups. Buy it and talk about it. Van Jones, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Order it online tonight.
John Campagna and Kevin Zeese, good to have you both with us once again.
Thank you very much.
The Mark Steiner Show is produced by Justin Levy and Jessica Phillips. We're engineered and directed by Zachary Coleman. This hour engineered by Melvin Jones. Our podcast this and all of our other programs, visit us at our web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WIPR 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.